Welcome, listeners. I'm Brad Hargraves, the host of the Thesis Driven Leader series. And today we have on Karen Mayo, who has been in the prop tech world for over a decade and knows about building real estate technology companies more than just about anyone else out there. Karen has founded and been an executive at some great names in the prop tech world, including Funnel, which is building leasing software for large multifamily operators. And she was most recently president of Moved, which is helping tenants move from place to place. She's also heavily involved on the investing side. She is an entrepreneur in residence at Camber Creek, one of the top early stage prop tech firms out there, and is a mentor at Metaprop, one of the top accelerators for real estate technology companies. So she understands from really all sides of the table what it means to build a technology company for the real estate industry. She's been at it a long time. And she has a really unique lens on what's going on in the ecosystem today. You know, a lot of investors, a lot of operators are increasingly skeptical of a lot of these prop tech point solution tools, the cost of them, the impact they can have on multifamily operations, and their overall prospects to be sustainable, profitable companies going forward. So we're going to talk a lot about that. We're going to talk about, you know, what it means to build a prop tech company, a real estate tech company today, and how entrepreneurs like Karen can set themselves up for success in the short term and in the long term. So we're really excited about this. Let's jump into it. Karen, welcome to the Thesis Driven podcast and video series. So excited to have you on the show.
Thanks, my friend. Thrilled to be here.
You are really one of the prop tech veterans. You've been doing this for as long as almost anyone. So what has changed since you started Funnel 12 years ago?
Brad, that's a really nice way to say I'm the old lady of prop tech, which is typically how I describe myself. So thank you for that. What has changed? A lot. I would say probably the most substantive is operators, just like the mind share of operators. So when we were starting Funnel, I think the biggest objection or challenge is, why do I need technology? Right? Like, to me, that was the overarching question 10, 12 years ago, 13 years ago. Well, why do I need it? Right? My vacancy is razor thin. What I'm doing works. Why should I give you the time of day? Right?
That was, and by operators, you're talking about owners, like anyone owning real estate.
Correct. I'll use operators as sort of a catch-all term, right? Owners, management companies, et cetera, as we think about the world of multifamily. Today, and we'll talk more about how the prop tech venture ecosystem has changed, I'm sure. But today, given the influx of capital over the past several years, you now have variety of solutions, variety of founders sort of knocking on the doors of operators saying, hey, I want to talk to you about, you know, your CRM, your accounting systems, right? Your leasing systems, whatever it may be, to the point that you have to cut above, I hate to say the noise, but you really do have to separate yourself from the pack. Why you? Why now? Why should they, you know, accept your call or answer your email out of the thousands of others in the queue or in their inbox? So I would say there's been a shift around, you know, technology or not, to, you know, separating yourself from the other solutions in market.
So, I mean, how are operators, owners navigating this challenge that there's 10 times, 20 times, 50 times as much stuff out there as there was 10 years ago? I mean, not everybody can be Brookfield and go spin up an innovation team.
Totally. I'd say folks are taking different approaches, right? I think at this point, you have some operators who are throwing up their hands, owners who are throwing up their hands and saying, you know what? I'm going to take a step back and I want to see how this all shakes out. You have others who are retreating to, you know, I think generally, if you were to look at the prop tech ecosystem over a period of, you know, let's say zoom out over a period of a decade, you had folks who were taking more of an all-in-one approach. Owners would actually describe themselves this way. I'm a Yardi shop. I'm a RealPage shop, right? All-in-one, I'm going to roll up whatever solutions they have. that tension around, and I mean, you wrote about this, that tension around, you know, a mediocre point solution, a mediocre CRM, a mediocre sort of add-on service, that tension ultimately opened them up to saying, you know what, we'll layer on an external company, right? Whether that's a funnel or a knock on the CRM front, right? We'll layer that on. We want best in breed. Now you're starting to see things cut the other way for some folks, where some owners are saying, you know what, I might retreat and start to bundle again. You have some folks who are saying, no, you know what, I'm going to continue to add on and I'm just going to staff up accordingly, right? A la innovation teams, right? Add in headcount to help manage this process. I'd say generally, some of the smartest operators, that's not to say that these other solutions don't make sense. I think it just depends on your resourcing and your staffing. More of a best of both worlds scenario, which is we are going to prioritize key initiatives and we're going to look for solutions that are deeply integrated, that really solve the problems both on site, you know, as well as corporate. And we're going to cherry pick a handful of companies and we're going to go deeper with those partners. So all in one, best of breed, I would say that third dimension is best of both worlds.
Yeah. So one dynamic that has changed, I would say dramatically since 2011, has been way more capital coming into the prop tech ecosystem. I mean, 2011, not a great time to go raise money for a brick and mortar software business, anything touching real estate. There's just less capital around overall, but particularly less capital. I mean, prop tech wasn't really a thing. Okay. So do you think that, I mean, do you agree with that transformation? Do you think it was a good thing for the ecosystem overall, the amount of capital that came into it?
I think it cuts both ways. So I remember back in 2011, we were part of an accelerator program and they had, you know, print out, you know, of the 10 companies, you know, in the cohort. And I can tell you that there were many investors who popped by and said, I'll meet with everyone except for that real estate tech thing. What is that?
Right.
So PropTech very much wasn't a thing, right? Wasn't in vogue 12, 13 years ago. That's shifted dramatically, right? You just have to look at data to see the influx of dollars and just the change year over year. I would say things are starting to, even if you look at data from, you know, year over year, things are starting to kind of normalize a bit, where there's not as much money flowing into these companies as there was, last year and the year before. Generally, I think we want to be very mindful of just as an operator, how much you're raising from whom, because it really does set a company up on a different trajectory, whether you raise venture money versus strategic angel money, how much of it you raise. And I'll you know, call out myself for a moment. I think, you know, very early days of Funnel, I didn't fully appreciate that concept. And I think as a, you know, second time entrepreneur, you really start to think about your sources of capital just differently, because you want to make sure that you have the right capital and those investors have the right objectives that line up with the long-term goals of the company. But generally speaking, I think more attention on this industry is a good thing. However, I do think we've funded companies that are at best products of other companies, at worst features of other companies.
Well, I think one thing you saw with the amount of capital coming into prop tech is that a lot of it came from places that did not really understand the nature of the real estate industry and what they were investing in. And so you saw that in funding a lot of, you know, companies tied to brick and mortar growth with venture dollars. You saw that in terms of, you know, funding point solutions, where it was going to be tough for that point solution to ever get big enough to get the justify the investment they were taking. Well, we'll talk about that more in a bit. I do want to go back to kind of the early days and, you know, you getting into prop tech, you know, starting a company like Funnel. Why do it? I mean, what in 2011 made you say, hey, we need new marketing solutions for multifamily and we should build this as a tech company?
Yeah. That's a great question. Part of it is just sheer optimism, right? That first-time founder naivete of saying, you know what, this thing needs to exist, and that fire in your belly, which, you know, we very much had. I would say, you know, also just looking at trends in other industries, right? Hospitality, namely, but looking at the effect and the impact technology had on, from a business perspective, on their experience from an enterprise software level, but also just on their own customers' experience, and looking and saying, okay, this is happening in other industries, right? This idea of OpenTable or Resy, streamlining the work on the back end for the business while creating a much more seamless experience on the front end for their customers. That didn't exist in real estate 13 years ago. So we made a bet that it's only a matter of time before folks will start to seek out solutions like this. And when we saw that a lot of operators and owners were in this all-in-one scenario, I'm a Yardi shop, I'm a RealPage shop, I'm leveraging accounting software from the 70s, 80s, and 90s to not only manage my back-end accounting financial efforts, but also my front-end consumer experience. We just said, no other industry does that.
Right.
Why do you do that? And that started to unpack, you know, what we believe it was, you know, was a real opportunity.
And so, and you didn't have a background in multifamily specifically, right?
I did not. And I didn't have a background in tech either. I was in business development and sales.
So how did you learn this about the multifamily industry?
Yeah, it was weird, right? I mean, I surrounded myself. So fortunately, I'll caveat this by saying my co-founder had a deep background in technology, not necessarily in real estate, but in technology. So I think, you know, having those complementary skill sets, I often will compare us to, you know, sort of soldiers back to back, right? With like, right, you know, the shields and the swords, just fighting all the things that could kill a young startup like ours. But we had that implicit trust of you have your side of the house, I have mine, which enabled us, I think, to work quickly. However, neither one of us had real estate experience. And I think something that we did very well, if I can give us credit, was we listened to the market and we surrounded ourselves with people who knew the problems intimately. And we would shadow them. We would work out of their offices. We built out customer advisory boards a couple of times, really to build that empathy muscle and really understand what problems were plaguing the industry. We didn't intend to know better and do better. We really surrounded ourselves with experts in the market.
So before we move back to the industry, I do want to, you know, just talk a bit about Funnel's evolution. You know, because in some ways you stayed true to kind of that initial thesis of we are going to, you know, be the better front end for, or the better resident side of these accounting platforms. On the other end, it did evolve a lot as you grew. So maybe talk a little bit about that evolution and where it's ended up over time.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, you know, when I describe Funnel's evolution, I say, you know, if I'm being generous, maybe we pivoted 1.5 times, probably more like 2 or 3. And I'm sure there's all these micro pivots if I really go back and look. But generally speaking, I mean, the company was started because my co-founder and I were frustrated apartment renters, right? We were approaching a category that really didn't have a ton of love or innovation. I'd argue that if we approached this problem today, you know, I don't know if we would have been successful. I think the days of I rented an apartment and I'm frustrated, I think that archetype of founder is going to and needs to evolve a little bit. Yeah. But more on that later. I would say generally, you know, we initially targeted to Funnel because we felt the pain as a consumer. And we said, you know, we want to do better for ourselves and we want to leave this industry better than we found it. That led us to the business side, exploring owners and operators' pain points. And I would say there was a pivot there. We were initially thinking about a consumer problem. And we said, really, to solve the consumer problem, you have to go to the business to unlock the opportunity. That was sort of pivot one. I'd say pivot two was, for better or worse, we subscribed to the Frank Sinatra theory. If you can make it in New York, you can make it anywhere. And we spent a lot of time building out products and solutions for New York. And when we attempted to scale that nationally, we fell flat on our face. Fortunately, right. We were able to rework our roadmap and pull some things forward that we were planning to do anyway, but advanced those things and pulled them forward to then approach some large national partners. And that was the ticket. And that enabled us to take similar success that we had in New York and scale that nationally, albeit with a more advanced, robust product. I'd call that pivot number two. Tons of micro pivots in between, but I think generally, you know, it's, you know, biggest lesson learned for me is the company you start with and often the people, right, aren't necessarily, you know, as a business scales and grows, it's not necessarily the business you end up with. Right. But I would say generally the thesis has, and the vision has remained the same.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought up the part about New York too. I mean, we talk a lot about New York on the show and, you know, I write about a lot about New York and thesis driven. I live in New York, but it is totally unique in terms of how the real estate market works here. I mean, the players aren't even the same, you know, you exactly. have different roles. It's none of the lessons pretty much translate, especially if you're doing real estate marketing. From New York, outside of New York. So it's a very important point. If you want to build something for the country, don't start in New York and don't build for New York.
You know, and I think in many ways, like, we experienced this pain for quite some time at Funnel, where we felt like an established business and company in New York. So you had one foot here in an established market, which we'd been painstakingly building for years. And then we had our other foot in the national market where we were babies. Like, I mean, Funnel was in its infancy in many ways.
Yeah.
So managing that was, you know, a fun time.
We experienced the same thing at Common.
Yeah.
We experienced the same thing at Common. I mean,
yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say we experienced the same thing at Common in that we built a huge portfolio in Brooklyn, which absolutely no one outside of New York gave us credit for. Yeah. Because it's, well, that's New York. That's different. And it was different.
Yeah, totally. You know, and I mean, I remember many investor VC conversations, the biggest objection to our business early days, or the biggest open question was, well, will it work outside of New York?
Right.
You know, but generally speaking, you know, I want to just shout out founders and folks who are building solutions that are adopted in New York. And, you know, I mean, New York is such an important market. It's such a unique market, to your point. You know, I would say cracking the code in New York is a very, it's a very difficult thing to do. I just think thinking through how you scale outside of New York, or if you're building a solution that's built for the problems of New York, that's fantastic. But maybe think about how you're going to capitalize the business to make sure that those things are aligned.
Yeah. So I do want to shift focus for a moment to something you have hinted at earlier, which is the property management system ecosystem. So we wrote about this at length in a thesis-driven newsletter, I guess about a month ago now, diving into kind of the property management system landscape, some of the different players, some of the incumbents, some of the challengers. And I'd love to hear, obviously, Funnel came up in that newsletter, given kind of your relationship with the property management systems, the love-hate relationship. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. Well, so first and foremost, I thought it was a fantastic article. So and very, very well researched. And, you know, I thought the folks that you brought to the table all had interesting viewpoints, right? And some of them were contradicting each other. And I, you know, and I think that's wonderful to see both sides, really to see all sides. Generally speaking, you know, and I think your post hit the nail on the head, these systems were and have remained to some extent in various levels of, you know, they were initially completely closed. Entrada, I call Entrada in many ways the sort of the first mover here to kind of bang down the doors of these systems and say, open the gates, right? And there were some legal repercussions of that, right? But then it forced all of these systems to have varying levels of openness, right? And you touch on this perfectly. Some are more open than others, and for very specific reasons, right? There is a natural tension, and will continue to be a natural tension, between solutions that are both partners and competitive with Yardi's various products, RealPage's various products. That just is. What I will say, though, is I don't think an integration is a moat. I think it is table stakes now. And part of that is because of the various systems that are in the market and the fact that there has been a lot of pressure. It's very easy, you know, when an operator said, I'm a Yardi shop and I'm going to add on one other solution, very different than I'm a Yardi shop and then I have 15 different solutions. When you have 15 different solutions, there's much more pressure on all of those solutions and Yardi to integrate with one another. So I would say, generally speaking, the idea of integration is now table stakes, and that tension, I think it's healthy. I think it will actually encourage both companies, their PMS, as well as the systems that are, you know, that are integrating with the PMS, to continue innovating and continue adding value to the shared customer.
So when you say the integration is table stakes, that's not a, that's not an advantage. That's not a moat. Sorry. That's just like, okay, you integrate with Yardi. That's just something you have to do. That is not a competitive advantage that should prevent others from treading on your turf.
I personally don't think so.
So how has Funnel specifically navigated this? I know you've been out of it day to day for a little while, but you know, have the, you know, we heard from Dom Beveridge in the article about how, you know, it's been a little fraught. How has it been fraught?
So I think the deeper you go, you know, and look, I would say it depends as well. When you're talking about technical fragility, it also depends on the system we're talking about, right? You have a company that's been run by one family for decades. You have another company that's been built and has grown, you know, I don't want to say largely on acquisitions, but let's face it, the ability to add on different products, many of those products were created through acquisitions, right? So just from an architectural standpoint, that will look different, right? So I would say, you know, you have kind of basic vanilla V1 integration, which is, do you integrate? Yes, we've paid our app partner interface fee. We've paid for one API. And we're now reading from one of the PMS systems. And then you layer on, okay, well, now we need to write back into those PMS systems. Okay, now we need multiple integrations, right? So not all integrations are created equal, right? So I would say, generally speaking, a vanilla basic integration, that's table stakes. As you start to go through more and more of the resident journey and the user journey, as Funnel has, you start to unlock more opportunities, more challenges, where it's like, okay, well, now we have all these other data points and those need to go back to the system. And many of which, like, okay, great, that's an API that exists off the shelf, let's unlock it. There's some that just don't exist. And you wrote about this as well. How do you solve for that? And some of that is uncharted territory that I think both the PMS systems and the companies are figuring out as they go.
Yeah.
To varying levels of success.
Yeah, it was sort of an open question. You know, we were integrating with both Yardi and Entrada at Common. There's a lot of things that are technically possible, but have varying degrees of fragility or legal uncertainty.
Right. And from like, an
you can scrape a lot of stuff from these platforms.
Sure.
Doesn't mean you should, but you can.
Right. Right. You know, and an interesting point came up around from the PMS standpoint, right? does it financially make sense for them to invest in opening up a new endpoint, right? Because there's the cost of doing it. There's the cost of maintaining it and supporting it. You know, and I think generally speaking, I mean, having empathy for that side and figuring out, okay, how do we make this a win all around? So it's not just a win for the company. It's ultimately a win for the PMS, definitely a win for the shared customer. I just think we need to, you know, ideally, if we can be a bit more empathetic on both sides, I think good things can come from that. But I think your article really shed light on what are all sides facing. And I think that's really important, because as you go deeper down the road of integration, that becomes more and more important, because you're no longer dealing with out of the box integrations. They're more bespoke, and the relationship and the BD piece that's involved with that is very important.
So I want to shift focus a little bit, go back to the PropTech ecosystem. So one thing you've also been really involved in is not just individual companies, but the ecosystem at large. You know, one part of that, you're an advisor to MetaProp. Tell us a little bit about that and the work you do there.
So I'm a big believer in paying it forward. I was very fortunate where when we were starting Funnel, I mentioned the accelerator program I was a part of, Techstars. MetaProp didn't exist yet. PropTech didn't exist yet, right? So we were part of Techstars, and we just had so much support from a mentorship side, right? So you brought up the fact that, you know, I didn't come from real estate. I didn't come from tech. One of the things that I think we did do well is, you know, as a founding team, we were very coachable and we were very aware of what we didn't know. And we were lucky. We had wonderful mentors who helped guided us both on the real estate fronts and made some valuable introductions. Folks who are still friends of mine today and folks who had, you know, significant role in helping Funnel get to where it is. We also had a lot of wonderful mentors on the venture front who helped teach me and guide me as a first-time founder what it's like to raise money, particularly not just in up markets, but in down markets, and particularly in a category I would call emerging at best. So I leaned heavily on those folks. So my view on it, right, is if I can help anyone learn something a little faster than I learned it, or help make the job feel a little less lonely, because let's face it, it is the most rewarding and the loneliest job in the world at the same time. If I can help in any way, shape, or form alleviate those things, it's work worth doing. So I've been, you know, afforded that through a couple of different programs, but MetaProp has been my longest standing engagement. I've been a mentor to their companies for years and varying levels, right? They've always been understanding around, you know, operating a business and the time that that takes. And, you know, they've been wonderful about, you know, how much time I can contribute. And sometimes that ebbs and flows cohort by cohort. But it's incredibly rewarding. Mentorship in general, for anyone listening who's thinking about it, it's one of the most rewarding things you can do.
And are there specific types of companies going through MetaProp that you like to mentor, types of founders you like to work with?
Generally, I mean, you know, the given for me is they need to be coachable. If they're not coachable, then, you know, then what are we doing? That's a higher bar than you would think. And there are some ways to kind of suss that out. But that's very important for me. I would say generally I like to help folks where I know I can make an impact. So, you know, I'm kind of, you know, my skill set inch wide, mile deep in multifamily, right? So ideally, if someone is pursuing a business that, you know, where I feel like I can give them an unfair advantage, either with my experience or with connections or with, you know, guidance and feedback around go to market, generally that helps. I tease people. My anti-resume is many, many pages. My resume is a few bullets. So if there are founders who are looking for specific guidance around fundraising, go to market, team building, general, just kind of founder therapy, I use that term very loosely, founder coaching, anyone who's looking for those, you know, four things, probably a good fit.
Awesome. So similarly, you know, talking to entrepreneurs, incubators, people who may don't have necessarily an idea right now, but are looking to start something. I mean, what areas of real estate do you think are underserved? I mean, you have a pretty wide breadth of things you see. You know, where do you think the opportunities are right now?
So it's interesting. I think this may or may not answer your question. I don't know if it's necessarily a product gap, but it's more of a team gap. So we talked about earlier, right? The idea of being, you know, first-time founder, and I didn't come from the industry. I rented an apartment,
right?
And, you know, I want to solve for it. I don't know if that founder profile plays today. I think the idea and what I would love to see would be more teams that merge folks who are in the industry, worked within the industry on the operating side, and maybe folks who either have deeper technical experience or prop tech experience, right? The category is now old enough where we'll start to see folks like me, founders who did it once and now want to do it again, second or the third time. Not so much of a product gap, but a team gap. I would love to see more teams come together, operators and entrepreneurs, because I think magic can come from that blend.
So you think about, you know, getting that started. I mean, would that be a studio model? I mean, do you think there's a greater need for this studio, venture studio concept in prop tech?
I think that's one way. I think that's interesting. I would think generally as well, just, you know, from an investor perspective, being on the lookout, and from a founder perspective, trying to find a match in someone across the aisle, for lack of a better phrase. I would say even a much smaller level, if teams can start to come together where you have more technical or more prop tech minded founders pairing with folks who are a bit more operational, even folks who are entrepreneurial, right? Try to affect change inside of an organization. I would love to see some of those founding teams come together, and whether that's supported through a venture studio or whether that's just supported on an ad hoc basis. I think that's the next generation of founding teams we will see, and hopefully, you know, we'll see.
Yeah, I agree with you that the, hey, I rented an apartment and had a bad experience, you know, that worked in 2014 when the space was very nascent.
Yes.
I'll debate it. You could even debate whether that worked at all, but it at least... people got started that way. I think you're right that that's not going to be the next generation. So how do you avoid, as you're a founder going down this journey, how do you avoid getting stuck in point solution hell? So you see this time and time and time again with these prop tech companies. They don't want to take on Yardi straight, you know, front and center. They don't want to take on CoStar. They don't want to take on Procore, any of the big platforms. So they end up saying, well, we'll just build a piece of it. And we'll do this piece better than Yardi does this piece, which is frankly not that hard because there's a lot of pieces to Yardi and many of them aren't that good. So, but how do you avoid getting stuck there as an entrepreneur? Because I think we've said, yeah, point solution's not great. How do you get out of that?
Yeah. Listen, that's a great question. And in many ways, like, I mean, I wish I had the silver bullet. Like, I mean, I felt this, I lived this every day at Funnel, right? Where we created a wedge for ourselves first in New York and then created a new wedge nationally. And it's incredibly challenging. I think generally speaking, you know, you spoke to something that's better than the PMS, right? Well, how much better? It's easy to implement. Well, how much, you know, I mean, is it that easy, right? I think these questions start to come up when it's like you start to examine, okay, I have a wedge in the market. How good is it? How strong is it, right? Like I look at someone like an Entrata And you wrote about this, right? When you look at the PMS systems that have been around, they've been around for decades. The incumbents have been around for decades. And right. really, the only two companies nipping at their heels, you've got AppFolio, you've got Entrata, right? And these companies, they're the baby incumbents, I guess you could say, because they were started in the 2000s, right? But I would say they both had a very compelling wedge. AppFolio was starting in a different area of the market, right? That was largely, underserved. And then you had Entrata that was a marketing and leasing solution. That's what they did. It was front end, right? So a very interesting wedge. And they were able to take that wedge and very quickly expand. It was also a very different time, right? PropTech wasn't a thing. Competition wasn't a thing, or wasn't nearly as, nearly as pervasive as it is today. So I would say find a wedge that, and again, it can't just be marginally better. It has to be 10 times better. Find a wedge that's a no-brainer, right? Right now, with rents the way that they are, you have folks who are looking to cut costs. It's really expensive to operate properties right now. People are looking to cut costs. So this idea of this per unit per month model, it might be time to reexamine that. People spend a ton of time, and by people, I mean founders. Founders spend a ton of time investing on the sales side, not nearly as much time on the onboarding and customer success side. Focus on making your product a no-brainer to not just purchase, but to implement. And I think if, you start to see that wedge, you'll have more and more success implementing that wedge. And ideally, you'll start to win the hearts and minds of your customers, and you'll start to determine, okay, where do we go from here? Because ultimately, we have yet to see a startup disrupt the incumbents. And the only two, like I said, who have really started nipping at their heels started with a very compelling wedge at that time. And they were able to gain significant market share fairly quickly.
Well, it also takes a while. I mean, you say fairly quickly, but, Entrata and AppFolio are, I believe, a combined 35 years old.
Yeah, that's fair.
That's very quickly in this space.
That's fair. And it's all relative. Right? So it's all relative. Yes.
It may be worth founders just checking their expectations about how quickly, if you're selling into multifamily owners and operators, you can get. And now they're just nipping at the heels after a combined 35 years. You get my point.
I do get your point. It goes to show, like I said, old lady of prop tech, right? So I've been conditioned to the sales cycle for some time. But I think when you compare it to anything outside of real estate, right? If you were to look at a traditional SaaS company in any other industry, it's incredibly slow. You have to be very patient to be an entrepreneur in this space. I mean, we started Funnel 13 years ago, for crying out loud. It takes a long time to penetrate this industry when compared to other industries, right? So I want to say that absolutely it takes time to build a name in this industry. And a lot of folks, right, when you're raising traditional venture capital that has its own time horizon, that's what I'm talking about when I'm saying you want to make sure that your capital expectations snap into the long-term objectives of the business, because that can start to create tension.
So I do want to go back to a point you made earlier, talking about different owners' strategies for evaluating and embracing technology. I want to come back to that. I want to talk about it from the owner's perspective, since we've been speaking a lot from the entrepreneur's perspective, which is important, but we have a lot of owners, we have a lot of developers who listen to us here at Thesis Driven. What owners do you think are doing it well? Like, of the strategies you laid out earlier, the owners that are approaching evaluating technology, working with new technologies well, who are they and what are they doing?
Yeah. So I would say generally owners who are taking to the extent they can, a more integrated approach, meaning they have innovation teams, they have operating teams that are working very closely and ideally working in sync to, you know, not only fund companies, but ultimately implement these solutions and provide feedback, iterative feedback along the way. You know, naming names for a second, they've been a longstanding supporter and friend to me, LaFrac in New York. They are wonderful customers, investors. When they jump into something, they really do it wholeheartedly. The whole team jumps in, and you really, it's one of those scenarios where you don't just get one champion, you develop many. But I'd say ultimately, you know, you want more integrated partners, folks where you can go wider and build a wider consensus within an organization. Ultimately, of course, there's always a champion, but you want to build wider consensus amongst the group. And there are some organizations that are just structured in a way that you're able to do that in an easier way, faster, and they're more apt to work with you in that regard versus working in silos. So I just have to call out my friends over there because they've been, I've worked with them for years now and they've been wonderful.
Agreed. Harry and his team were investors in Common, and they're good people, very good people, and good people to have on your side.
Yeah. And I just think that that ethos in general, right, of being open, sharing the good and the bad quickly, having folks around the table who are a bit more innovative, who want to do things differently, but don't want to just innovate for innovating's sake. I think those are sort of the characteristics that I look for in partners, particularly dev partners who you're bringing on earlier on in the ride.
So a couple months ago, you left Moovd. That's your most recent venture in prop tech. What's next for you?
Thanks for asking. Yeah, it's a good question. I'm taking some time, which frankly I did not do after Funnel, my first go around. I am taking December and a bit of January to recalibrate. I'm going to be jumping back into the fray though. So I will be starting something new. I'm excited to talk about it when the time is right. But yeah, I mean, I feel like now...
Is it in prop tech?
It is in prop tech. It is a great time to start. I mean, where else would I go, Brad? Really? I mean, these are my people. I would say generally, like, I think it's a great time to start a company. I think some of the best companies of our generation were started in down markets. I am trying to be very thoughtful around what we're building and how we're building. I want to be a solution solving a problem, not a solution looking for a problem to solve. So taking my time, having really thoughtful conversations with people I know and trust, and you will hear more very, very soon, I can assure you.
Very, very excited. May I ask one more follow-up question there? What lessons from Funnel and Moovd are you going to be taking and applying to your new venture?
Yeah. Helping, like really, really flexing that empathy muscle to listen to customers, especially now where they've been inundated with solutions. It's really, really important to understand what are the true problems and ideally work in concert with those folks to kind of unpack, okay, what are problems that are worth solving? And what is the best way to tackle this? Really being thoughtful about kind of what you're setting out to do and helping, I mean, really, you know, making them a part of the solution. I think that's really, really important. I think developing something in a silo, you risk building something that nobody wants. You risk solving for a problem that really isn't a problem. So I'd say that's something we did to give ourselves credit. We did that really, really well at Funnel. We did that well at Moovd.
Yeah.
And that's something I want to continue doing. Something that, you know, big lesson learned, I mean, people early stage, especially where one person has such a huge impact on culture and values, so, so important. So, you know, I was very, I mean, the folks at Moovd are just fantastic. And it was so hard to leave for that reason. I mean, there were many reasons. The company was doing well, amazing product, but the people just so good, which made it so difficult, right? I always think about push and pulls, right? When you're looking to make a change, it's like, are you being pushed or are you being pulled? It was totally a pull to start something new, feeling like the time was right to jump back into the fray. I had taken a couple of years to kind of catch my breath, but the people you surround yourselves with in the early days of building a startup are so, it's just mission critical. And I feel very yeah. fortunate in the sense that the landscape of talent has evolved. There are now folks who, you know, who I've known, whether or not I've worked with them in the past, or we've been colleagues or, you know, worked together or gotten to know each other in some other way. I feel really fortunate that I've been in this industry as long as I have. And, the fact that I get to, I'm lucky enough to work with some incredible people, isn't lost on me. So I would say generally, like, the team is getting that right is so important. And that's true of folks you're working with, as well as folks you're surrounding yeah. yourself with, advisors, investors, et cetera. So, yeah, I mean, hopefully doubling down on the things that worked and, you know, staying a million miles away from the things that did.
That's a plan.
That's always the plan. That's the goal.
So I would love to move to the lightning round. So quick questions, quick answers. Same questions for every guest we have on. So you ready to jump in?
Let's do it.
All right. So first one, tell us about one startup, developer, or entrepreneur you're watching closely and why.
I would say I'm always watching the underdogs. I know that's not a person, but I'm going to tell you, like, I'm watching, okay. like, I'm always looking for, you know, founders who maybe aren't getting the attention that they should, whether they're marginalized found, like, I'm always looking for the underdogs and I'm looking for opportunities and variations. So I'd say generally that's, you know, and I gravitate towards folks like that. So just generally, I would say I'm always watching people who are thinking about, I don't know, things in a different way. I've come across a couple founders lately who just have like grit and hustle. And they're working on things that are, you know, just new and innovative. And yeah, but generally speaking, I always go for the underdogs.
Thanks. So when we're recording this podcast in the 2030s, what is the most important thing we'll be talking about?
You know, it's interesting. Going back to your property management software article, right? And this urge to innovate. I wonder who the blockbuster is going to be. Who's going to be the blockbuster in our space? Who's going to be the Netflix in our space? So hopefully we're talking about that.
Yeah, hopefully those will have shaken out by the 2030s.
Exactly.
It's unclear to me if another 10 years will do it, but I hope we can even have that conversation in the 2030s, and that's not more of a 2050s conversation.
That's the goal. That's hopefully. The goal. Let's have that blockbuster Netflix scenario worked out by the 2030s.
So if you could snap your fingers and change one real estate related law or policy, local, national, federal, whatever, what would it be and why?
I'm a New Yorker at heart. I mean, I lived in New York for nearly 20 years. I don't know if that gives me the right to say that. You talked a bit about the rental housing crisis in New York and the rent stabilization issue. And you talked a lot about this idea of the missing middle, which I thought was super interesting. I would love to see, and again, I don't have the magic wand scenario here, but I would love to see Albany and owners in New York come together and work collaboratively towards a solution. I'm just so pro New York. So I would love to see, I mean, this is such a huge issue and the housing crisis is dire. I would love to see some progress there around reform.
I would too. Your lips to God's ears. I think we'll see resolution of the property management system issue first.
I know. It's brutal. But again, magic wand scenario, if I could solve for anything,
magic wand. It would be that. No, you answered the question. Magic wand.
Listen, it's a tall order, but I'd love to see it solved.
You know? All right. I'm here for it. I'm here for it. I hope you're right. I hope it'll happen.
PMS maybe solutions along... and missing middle in New York. That's it.
That's what we
if
need.
If I could solve for anything, those two things.
Maybe along that line, next question. What is one city or place you would bet on?
Place, North Carolina, Asheville, Raleigh. If I'm going for new, nice. Like just growing opportunities, pure resilience, I would never bet against New York. Bet on New York every single day.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of North Carolina myself. So I agree with you there.
There you go.
Last question. What's one new technology that will have the biggest impact on the built world?
This feels like such a cop out. I have to say AI. I have to. I just think we're at a point where we will look back 5-10 years from now and the impact, like this just feels like one of those monumental shifts, like the internet, where we will look back and see the impact this technology has had, and it will be monumental. It feels like such a cop-out answer, but I truly believe it's going to have a significant impact on this industry over the next, 5-10 years.
I mean, I agree. I'd love to hear some kind of examples companies are looking at right now in AI that you think will are indicative of the kind of impact it'll have.
Well, let's look at Elise, for instance, right? What they've been able to do, and again, you can argue short period of time, right? Like we've all been, this is in prop tech math, right? Prop tech math, things take longer than, the average bear and the average industry. But they've been able to create something that I think, it's worked well in New York. It's worked well nationally. They've, obviously the AI landscape and the technology landscape has changed significantly since they've got going. But I think from a use case perspective and from a thesis perspective, they've been able to prove out the use case of automating really time-consuming workflows through AI. And I think, naturally as an industry, we've been very focused on sort of the top of the funnel or the sales and the leasing components and leveraging AI for that. I think it will be really interesting to see how we leverage AI for other workflows within property management. I think we've been very focused on the sexy part, which is let's get people in the units. Let's leverage AI around sort of the leasing agent sort of workflow and opportunity. It will be interesting to see where else we take it.
Yeah, especially on the cost side. I think there's huge opportunities there, and that's what 100%. Everyone's talking about right now.
Exactly, exactly.
Karen Mayo, thank you so, so much for being on the show today. Really one of the most thoughtful people I know in prop tech, great builder, veteran builder, and super, super excited to see what you have cooking next. So Karen, thank you for being on the show.
Thanks, my friend. Thanks for having me.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Karen. As I said, she is one of the most thoughtful people in the prop tech world today. And I hope everyone got a lot of lessons out of that and were really able to think about how they want to craft their companies and attack this market over the next decade. I also really hope you join us next week. We have Steve Case, the founder of Revolution, on the show. Now, Steve has a really incredible business background. He was at AOL Time Warner back in the day, led that company as CEO, and has since really moved over to the investing side, thinking about the role of cities and technology. And he's emerged as one of the leaders thinking about how tech and cities interrelate. He wrote Rise of the Rest, which is a book thinking about the role of cities and the cities that are likely to emerge in the future. And we have him on next week talking about what he's written, how he's thinking about technology's role and the cities that are likely to win the next decade. So hope you can join us for this conversation with Steve next week. See you then.